Hello and welcome to another Sustainable Wine podcast with me, Hannah Halmari. For today's Sustainable Wine Roundtable member interview, I am joined by Michael Parks, who is the Director of Sustainability at Treasury Wine Estates. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, great to be here.
Treasury Wine Estates is an Australian global winemaking and distribution business, and I'm sure many of our listeners will have come across your wines. To start us off, why don't you give us a quick introduction to the company and the portfolio of brands?
Treasury Wine Estates is some of the world's leading premium wine companies. As you said, we're listed on the Australian Securities Exchange, and across the globe, we've got about 2,500 employees. We've really got viticultural and production assets everywhere you'd want to be. So here in Australia, we've got plenty in the Barossa Valley and Coonawarra. Over in the States, pretty heavily centered around Napa, Marlborough in New Zealand, Bordeaux in France, and Tuscany in Italy. We've got a global portfolio of brands numbering about 70 markets where we're actively selling, and some of the big names there I'm sure everyone's familiar with, whether it's Penfolds or 19 Crimes, Pepperjack, Squealing Pig, Wins, Matua, some of the newcomers like Frank Family Vineyards.
And as Director of Sustainability, what does your role exactly entail? Are you responsible for the sustainability strategy of the business as a whole or just a particular division?
My role is a global one, very much focused on our overarching strategy, but also implementing it within the business, basically the end-to-end, which is the really exciting part of it. You get to see what investors think all the way through to how it comes to life on a vineyard. So it's quite broad-reaching.
So what is Treasury Wine Estates' sustainability strategy, and how are you working to embed sustainability throughout the business, as you said, end-to-end?
About 2 years ago, Treasury really refreshed its approach to sustainability, and that was really a nod that, you know, as one of the largest vertically integrated wine players in the industry, we had to take a leadership role. And our strategy is about doing that, about cultivating a brighter future. And we've got three focus areas. The first one's about building a resilient business. Secondly, about fostering healthy, inclusive communities. And what we're all here to do, produce sustainable wine.
Let's start with that first pillar on building a resilient business. What exactly does that cover? What are the key focus areas for you there?
This is just acknowledging that the world as we know it's, you know, going to change. And as a business, we need to be prepared for that. It's heavily focused on climate change, energy, as well as water.
On Treasury Wine Estates' decarbonization journey, what climate goals have you set for yourself and where are you currently at?
This is an area where we really focused our initial attention because, you know, if we don't get this right, then the industry is going to have, you know, some very significant challenges. As a viticultural business, we're climate exposed, and we wanted to really demonstrate that a quick transition is possible. The biggest and quickest move that we could make was transitioning to renewable electricity across all our operations. At the time when we set the target, electricity accounted for about 70% of our Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions, so it was really taking a meaningful chunk. And so in 2021, we thought, how quickly can we do this and do it in a meaningful way where we're actively rolling out solar, in particular on our operations, as well as increasing efficiency? We thought we could do it in 3 years. And in F21, we're operating about 0.1% renewable. A couple of years in, we're now reached just under 20% at the end of F23. We've had a very busy couple of years. We've invested just around $27 million in a range of renewable and energy efficiency projects. And in this last year alone, we completed 21 projects globally, bringing in about 6,000 megawatt hours of renewable electricity into our operations. Testament to our ambition is that we launched Australia's largest winery solar installation at Tweed Barossa, where we've got some quite significant winemaking and packaging facilities.
What about Scope 3 emissions? What percentage of Treasury Wine Estates' carbon footprint is from Scope 3?
Yeah, Scope 3 accounts for about 95% of our emissions, which is pretty typical for a business like ours. The two big areas are really in glass, in the packaging of the product, and then the distribution of that product. Obviously, an area of where we've got a number of programs in place, particularly trying to lightweight our bottles, as well as increase the recycled content where we can.
And do you have specific markets where you find that lightweighting bottles is landing better with consumers? I mean, you know, I'm sure the strategy differs across the regions that you operate in.
Yeah, there is this sort of consumer perception, if you like, that heavier glass equals a higher value product that we're currently doing a fair bit of research on at the moment, and in particular in America, where heavier glass is the norm. I think in other markets, particularly, you know, in the Nordics, glass or even alternate packaging types such as bag-in-box are increasingly in focus given their reduced carbon emissions.
Treasury Wine Estates is a public company, so I'd be keen to hear from you. How are you seeing the global climate disclosure landscape evolving? I mean, I read that you're moving towards mandatory climate disclosure in Australia. So how is the company preparing for this?
One hat on as someone who has to write the report, it's a little bit scary and challenging, but I'm really confident in the work that we've done to date in terms of just getting very good data, very good metering and insights so that we can provide that transparency to stakeholders. And I think that's what the reporting is trying to get at, really. And so, you know, as a practitioner, I do welcome the change, and the ability for people to make meaningful comparisons is always important.
Moving on to the second pillar that you mentioned, which is producing sustainable wine. Tell us a little bit more about that, and perhaps specifically we can focus the conversation on the role of certification.
For many years, Treasury's always sought to obtain the relevant certification, sustainability certification for its viticultural or winemaking facilities, and these vary by region. So here in Australia, it's Sustainable Wine Grower in Australia, and there's many others. And the reason for that was that we see certification as a really important way of demonstrating to customers and consumers that the wine has been produced sustainably and giving them that comfort. In recent times, we've sought to pull that certification through to our brands, which has meant we've had to work more extensively across our grower and bulk wine community. In Australia, it's about 70% of our intake comes from either growers or bulk wine providers. A fair bit of work in the past couple of years in particular in terms of raising awareness about the scheme, providing targeted support, whether it's holding training, subsidising access to the training, negotiating for cheaper audit rates, providing ongoing support and advice and things like that, have been really crucial in getting growers and those bulk wine providers' attention over the past few years. And it's been quite successful, really. In F21, I think about 5% of our intake was certified. And in F23, 86% of grower fruit coming from Australia was certified. So we've made some really good progress in the last couple of years, which is really pleasing. And we're starting to see that be able to translate it to brands as a result, with a number of our brands in America, such as Etude, and here in Australia, with brands like Wings now being able to be certified. It's a really positive step for everyone in the value chain.
And you mentioned some of the ways in which you're supporting growers to get certified, but I'd be keen to just dig a bit deeper into what you see as the biggest barriers to certification.
The barriers are pretty unique, I guess, to each grower and their particular circumstances. We've been faced with everyone you can imagine, whether it be the costs associated with becoming certified and having your annual audits, right through to some of our growers haven't been able to use a computer. They don't actually have a computer, so they can't complete the workbook and things like that. And so we've had to take a really targeted approach in helping each of these partners through their particular challenges, working at that industry level and making sure that there's good training available in the regions, as well as the subsidised audit and audit days that are held have been particularly important in just ensuring that the transition is as easy as possible.
The certification landscape is incredibly complex, as we know, and that's a key area that the Sustainable Wine Roundtable is working on, to create a global reference standard for sustainable wine so that we can compare and benchmark all the different regional and local certifications. How are you currently navigating this complex landscape, and how will the work of the SWR help you?
Well, look, as a global business, it's pretty complex for us. I think there's about 7 different trust marks that we need to be across and maintain certification. They're all slightly different and all focus on slightly different things. I think there's room and indeed a need for that standardisation, and that's why Treasury Wine Estates is really proud to be a founding member of the Sustainable Wine Roundtable. We think there's great utility, not only for the industry, but for customers and consumers in a global reference standard.
Treasury Wine Estates conducted some research in 2022, I believe, on alcohol consumption and health. So can you tell us a bit about this research and what the key findings were?
The research we conducted was just really making sure that we were staying as close to the scientific evidence as we can, making sure that as a company, we were doing absolutely everything we could. And the takeaways were really that we all must be doing more to reduce harmful consumption of alcohol. We really do believe that is in the best long-term interest of our business and everyone who's associated with our business. And as a result of this research, we've made a number of commitments around product labeling and so on. But I think secondly, it also strengthened our resolve around moderation in particular, and that by giving consumers better information as well as providing more choice, we were going to be in a better position as a company and industry. And as a result of that, there's been a significant investment around $10 million that we're undertaking into the no and low alcohol space. And we really want to be a leader in this growing segment.
So on the low and no alcohol market segment, what kind of trends are you seeing there? Is there perhaps a specific market where you see that that's really taking off?
I think the overarching trend of consumers are drinking less, but drinking more premium products holds true. And I think in the no and low alcohol segment in particular, I think that we're seeing quite significant growth there as well. One of the reasons that underpins that significant $10 million investment is just trying to understand that market a little bit better and making sure we've got a premium product to put into the marketplace. We are investing in a state-of-the-art low alcohol production facility in the Barossa Valleys because we believe that category does have huge potential in giving more choice and while still enjoying the flavors and the mouthfeel that is associated with wine. I think we've made some good strides with some of our products like Wolf Blass Zero, but more recently we've tapped into that moderation trend with Pepperjack Mid-Strength, which is Australia's favourite Shiraz, but with half the alcohol content, and so coming in around 7%, we think there's tremendous upside in that segment of the market.
Michael, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast and for sharing your insights. It's been really great to hear about Treasury Wine Estates' sustainability progress, and I look forward to following your work.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe to Sustainable Wine's podcast channel and sign up on www.sustainablewine.co.uk to receive our newsletter and regular updates. And of course, if you're interested in getting involved in this SWR, please do just get in touch.